The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 237. And I'm going to be honest with you, I really am at a loss for words for the initial part of this introduction, because usually it's the, hey, thank you for listening, how are you doing, you know, talking about some other miscellaneous stuff before kind of introducing my guest. And you know, I live here in Columbus, Ohio. It's home base, and it, like many other cities in America, and hell, I mean, other cities around the world, have been rocked by the turmoil and the brutality that has gone on the last several days. And, you know, I really can't believe that it's 2020 and we still are having people who are killed and hurt and oppressed simply based on their skin color. It still is somewhat outrageous to me that we as a nation are still dealing with this idea of racism in our own country. We must change how we do this. We must do something to stop all of this. We must change the way that we treat people of color. We must find a solution to the racism that plagues our nation. And it's not, you know, we'll think about it or we'll get to it later. No, we must. We must do it right now. Clearly what we have been doing has not been working. So we have to make a change. And I think that's it. I could sit here for an hour and a half and talk more, but the bottom line is the same. We must change, period. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about my guest on this episode of the PVD Cast. My guest is an author, an activist, and an entrepreneur, and she has got a new Kickstarter out for a children's book that she wrote called Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus. It's a children's book about the coronavirus. Of course, I'm talking about Francesca Caliballo. Francesca joined me via Uber conference. She's clear over in Rome, Italy. And that to me is mind blowing. I think Francesca is the farthest outlying person that I've spoke to. I talked to Mark Rahill in Ireland. So this is Italy, which I think that's even further east. But nonetheless, I appreciate the fact that she took some time out of her very busy schedule to come on and talk about the Kickstarter project. You're going to find out why she decided to create this children's book. And we even talk about some of her other endeavors that she has done in the past. So it's one very interesting and very eye-opening conversation. And we're going to get to it. But before we do, I need to let you know real quickly about a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. Now they're back open. So you can stop by the store, which is located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. As I'm telling you all the time, they have everything that you could use for your comic book fandom. They got single issues, graphic novels, collections, back issues, posters, various collectibles. Just stop on over to the store and see what they have. But you know what? If you're still saying, I don't know, I don't want to go out in public, you know, COVID-19 is still out there, I get you, no problem. They're online. You can simply check out their website, wgcomics.com, or you can check out their Facebook page, which again is at WG Comics. And I talked to Jeff the other day. They're going to be back doing some of those awesome online Facebook Live auctions here in the next couple weeks. So keep your eyes open to the website or to the Facebook page to get more details on that. It's a great opportunity to get your hands on some cool comics. So once again, thank you, World's Greatest Comics. And if you stop by the store or you interact with them digitally, let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PBD Cast. And I need to give you one final reminder real quick that each and every Monday night at 9:30 p.m., you can hear the PVD Cast on Redline Radio. Simply go to redlineradiollc.com or search for them on Facebook under the same moniker, Redline Radio LLC, and you can check out the PVD Cast and all of the great other shows that are on the station, as well as some awesome music as well. But one final little twist that if you happen to be an Android phone user and you want to have the station with you wherever you go, simply go over to Google Play Store, type in Redline Radio LLC, the app will pop up, you download it onto your phone, and Walla Walla, Washington, you could take Redline Radio with you wherever you go. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with Francesca Cavallo to talk about her new project, Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the PVD Cast, and I'm sitting down with author, activist, entrepreneur, someone that wears lots of hats, Francesca Cavallo. Francesca, how are you today?
I'm very good. It's great to be here.
And thank you for taking some time out of your busy day to sit down and chat with us about your new project. And we're going to talk about that project first, and not to undermine any of the other great work you have done, but I'd like to just talk a little bit about this new project entitled Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus. So could you give the listeners a little summary of that tale?
Of course. So Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus is a children's book about the first hero of this pandemic, Dr. Li Wenliang. Dr. Li Wenliang was the ophthalmologist, the eye doctor that was the first to raise the alarm that a novel coronavirus was spreading in Wuhan, China. And he was accused by the police to be spreading false information. He was forced to sign a letter where he auto-accused himself of spreading false information. What happened, the story is very sad, because what Dr. Li was trying to do was he was trying to warn his colleagues that because this novel virus was going around, they should protect themselves and wear protective gear while they were working in the one central hospital. And because of the intervention of the police, a lot more doctors contracted COVID-19, and he was one of them. In fact, on February the 7th, he died of coronavirus, of COVID-19 in Wuhan, leaving behind a child and a pregnant wife. So it is a somewhat sad story, but the thing is that Dr. Li became a universal symbol of the importance of science and of freedom. So his story spoke to a lot of people around the world, because of course there are parts of his story that are very specific to the political situation in China. But if you think about it, we've seen censorship applied to scientists, and we've seen warnings issued by scientists ignored pretty much in all over the world. I'm Italian, as you probably guessed from my accent. Even though in my own head I sound very American, but I have no experience that it's not the case. But I've seen this in my home country, Italy, where in Milan, Milan became this incredible epicenter of COVID-19, where a lot of people died, and it was a total failure of the healthcare system there. And part of it was because they ignored the warnings of the doctors that realized that there was something wrong going on. And the same happened in the United States. Look what happened in New York, and how hard it has been for President Trump to base his action his actions on the on the warnings issued by science authorities. So I think that Dr. Lee's story is relevant to all of us because it's a little bit what happened all around the world, and that is why his story became so symbolic for so many people, and not just for Chinese people demanding freedom from their government.
From my research, you had originally wrote this tale as kind of a short story, and then you placed it on your website and got a huge reaction. I guess I'm going to start off by saying, going back to that original short story, what made you pick up a pen and start coming up with this idea of writing this tale?
You see, ever since the coronavirus emergency started, I tried to understand what could I do to serve my community. I have a community of readers across many, many different countries. And this was a unique situation where all of my readers were going through something similar at the same time. And it's not often that something like this happens. So I've been trying to understand what I could do to champion the rights of children during this very difficult time. And one of the things that I started doing was at the very beginning of the emergency, when they started closing down schools, I realized that no one was talking to children to explain to them what was happening. So it was a little bit taken for granted that kids would be happy of the fact that they were not going to school for a few days, that they had this sort of a surprise vacation. And not a lot of explanations were offered to them. So I started this series on Instagram where I was basically giving parents advice on how to explain, how to talk to their children about coronavirus, how to make space for their feelings in the conversations that they were, you know, that parents were having in the home. And one thing that really struck my imagination, because during these researches, I learned that the Prime Minister of Norway, Erna Solberg, when they shut down schools in Norway, she held a press conference only for kids. She just answered to children's questions, which I found a brilliant move, because part of what's hard in this day and age is the fact that we need a much more inclusive leadership, because the world we live in is much more complicated than the world we lived in when we were in, when we were in Second World War, for example. Still, we have seen that for many leaders, there was this rhetoric of leaders talking to the country as if it were one man. Guess what? That's not how you can talk today to a country. You cannot talk to a country as if it were one man, because when people don't feel seen by your speeches, when they don't feel seen during an emergency, it is extremely hard that they will cooperate in the reconstruction of a country. So in a moment where it is very important to invest on resilience, it is incredibly important to make every part of the population feel seen. And that means every part of the population in terms of race, in terms of like social class, but it also means in terms of age, because children are, the fact that parents and kids spend so much time together, it is paramount that children feel like they have an understanding of what is happening, that they don't feel left behind. So I was in this mindset, and an Italian news magazine asked me to write a fairy tale about coronavirus. So I leaped at the chance, because that is exactly where I was with my imagination. And I wrote this short fairy tale about coronavirus for this magazine. It got published, and when I read it, I was like, I think it could be helpful to more, you know, to more people. So I asked a company that I'm, you know, I'm friends with the founder of a company that is called Translated, and they offer professional online translation services. And I asked them to translate the story in English, in English, Spanish, and German. And I hired an illustrator, and I asked her to create a few illustrations for to basically put this short story into a PDF, an illustrated PDF. And I put it up on my website in four languages, Italian, English, Spanish, and German. And the story went absolutely viral. It was in 2 weeks, it was downloaded by 40,000 people.
Wow.
But the most mind-blowing thing was that volunteers from every corner of the globe started messaging me, offering to translate the story in Hindi, Marathi, Kinyarwanda, Khmer, Indonesian, Philippine, you name it. The story is now translated into 35 languages. So it was mind-blowing to see such a strong response, and it was such a clear indication that there is hunger from parents, not just to, because there is a lot of content also on YouTube to explain to children what coronavirus is, but what I tried to do with this book was to do something more. I wanted to offer children a space to explore their feelings about the pandemic with their parents. So not just a space to receive scientific information, albeit one of the things that I wanted to do was to offer children a story that was based on facts, also to protect them from the spread of conspiracy theories about the origins of coronavirus. But part of what I wanted to do is just to offer them a space to explore what happened. So there was this virus, it started there. This doctor was really brave. Unfortunately, he died, but then the virus continued to travel into the world, and the same situation that had occurred in China happened in many other places. It was paramount for people to keep people safe, to keep them in their homes. And this is what happened. And you know, by reconstructing this and by answering questions that children asked me, like, for example, where do homeless people go when there are stay-at-home orders? Or how do deaf people lip read when everyone is wearing a face mask? Some of these are questions that I hadn't asked myself, but it shows how children's imagination was activated by this disruption in their routine, and how important it is for them to find a story where they can find a coherent narrative that accompanies them, not just through the information, but also through the feelings that they felt and that they are feeling over the course of this very new situation.
And I think you touched on one of my bullet points I was going to mention, is I think it's been incredibly hard for adults, let alone children, to get the straight information that we need to protect ourselves.
Yeah. You see, the other day I was working, in the city center in Rome now, and I started hearing people shouting in the street. So I went downstairs, and there were protesters. There were the Italian version of the yellow vests, the protests in France from some months ago, the yellow vests.
Yes.
In Italy, they are called orange vests.
Okay.
And so there was this group combined with an extreme right group that is called Casa Pound. And they were not a lot of people, but there had been fight with the police. And it really hit me because the things that they were shouting were, the government is killing us. And they were like, it was touching because they really believed that they were living in a country where the government was deliberately trying to assassinate them with a virus. Now, that is pretty intense. And you could see the desperation in their eyes. And so I felt so sorry for them because I could see that they were speaking from their truth. But the problem is that they had been convinced of these conspiracy theories by people like the leaders of the far right in Italy, that are Matteo Salvini and Giorgia Meloni, that are trying to use their vulnerability by convincing them that they cannot trust anyone and that they have no chance of understanding what is happening around them, because everything, their lives are decided by people that are way more powerful than them. And so they are trying to weaponize their fears against them to take, just to take the power for personal political gain. So I'm part of what I wanted to do with this book was to because you know, sometimes conspiracy theories are effective because they are compelling from a narrative standpoint. Sometimes the reality is more complex, it is more difficult to understand, and it doesn't make for such a beautiful story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because instead, because conspiracy theories are not bound by facts, you can tweak the story however you like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much easier to create compelling narratives. So part of my worry was, what if like children grow up in a society that exposes them to this worldview where the world is divided into two? One part of the world is like these very few people, usually white, maybe white rich men that decide everything. And then the rest of us who are powerless and have no opportunity to affect change around us, not only to affect change, but even to trust our own intelligence to understand and to intervene in reality. So I wanted to create a compelling origin story of coronavirus based on facts so that children could be protected by this from this surge of conspiracy theories.
So let's talk about the project and the Kickstarter that goes along with it. You're going to create a hardcover, 44-page mm-hmm. book, and the Kickstarter's going on right now. So could you tell us a little bit about the campaign? Are there any perks, any stretch goals? How can fans or how can listeners find it? Give us the scoop on the Kickstarter, please.
Sure. Well, first of all, the thing is that this will be a Kickstarter exclusive edition, meaning that it won't be available this edition of the book will not be available anywhere else.
Okay.
So it is a pretty good opportunity to get a way to remember this time. One way or another, it's been very intense for all of us. Some of us have had the opportunity to get in touch deeper with themselves because of the quarantine. Some other people will remember this as many other people, unfortunately, will remember this as a very, very hard year because of economic reasons, because of the uncertainty, because of the anxiety. But there is no doubt that this is going to be one of the historic events of our generation. So this is something that happens once in a century, twice in a century, maybe luckily.
Yeah.
So this is also a way to kind of, for me, to kind of record the perspective of children of an historic event. So the book will be an opportunity also to have something tangible in this moment where it seems like reality is escaping from our hands and we can hold on to anything. It was important for me not to leave the book as a digital publication, but to make it an object, something that you can touch and you can hold on to. So this is something that I really wanted to do. Then the book will be, it's a beautiful hardcover. It's the classic format of a picture book. So it's a little bit bigger than an A4 sheet. So it will be pretty big. There will be a ton of original artwork in it. And the illustrator creating the art is an Italian illustrator that works with researchers from Cambridge University. She's a scientific illustrator. She's absolutely amazing. And there is the opportunity for the backers of the Kickstarter campaign to add the name of someone whose courage they want to celebrate in the book, because at the end of the book, there will be this gallery of the bravest of the brave, where backers will have the opportunity to celebrate their kids, but it can also be like a first responder or a doctor or their partner, someone they know whose courage has been important during this pandemic. So there is this perk for the backers of the campaign. And then there is the possibility to add languages. So as I said at the beginning, this is my fourth Kickstarter campaign, but it is the first time that you can order the book in more than one language. So you can order the book right now in English, Italian, and Chinese. But if you want, there is a super pledge for $1,500 where you can add one language and receive 50 copies in that language. And just yesterday, we received the first backer at this super pledge level. And it's a Filipino store. It's a Filipino e-commerce of books that ordered their translation in Filipino of Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus. So it is a big opportunity. And I wanted to honor the fact that all of these different volunteers translated the short version of the story. The version of the story in the book will be a longer one and more complete one. But I wanted to kind of honor the fact that this is an experience that is bringing humanity together. Mm-hmm. There are people that are trying to sow division, but the reality of it is that we are, as a human species, we are in this together. And the fact that we are sharing this experience is very powerful. And I hope that many people around the world will have the opportunity to read this story and to kind of recap what happened together.
Could we talk a little bit about the creative team that has helped you out? You mentioned your artist, Claudia, correct? And also have another individual, Samuela, that was helping out with the book as well as more of a kind of a
graphic designer, art director.
Graphic designer, yes, exactly. So how did you find them?
So Samuele Motta, we've been working together for 10 years now. Okay. So we've been companions of many adventures. He's based in London. So we lived apart for many, many years. But he was the first art director when I first got started. When I came to the United States, I came because I was accepted into a startup incubator called 500 Startups. And the first person that I brought with me from Italy back then in 2012 was Samuele Motta. He was the art director of the first version of Timbuktu Magazine, which was the iPad magazine for children, which was the first publishing product that I created when I moved from Italy to the US. As for Claudia Flandoli, the illustrator, I over the course of the past 10 years, I developed a network of illustrators that follow me on social media and I follow them. So part of the reason why I wanted to do this book and why I wanted to do it now was that a lot of people and a lot of creative people lost their jobs during this pandemic. And because reminded at the beginning of our chat, I wear multiple hats and one of them is entrepreneur. I am an entrepreneur. Part of me was like, what can I do to kind of create job opportunities for people that are around me? And that I, you know, because yes, of course you can and you should donate to charities. And I, like many of us, I did that too. But part of my call as an entrepreneur is in moments of difficulty, you have to create job opportunities for people, because that is what it goes a long way to kind of, when you lose your job, all of a sudden, it can make you depressed. It can make you, you know, if you don't feel useful, if you don't feel that you're using your talents. So I wanted to create an opportunity for a team to work together on something that I believed in. So I put out this call on my Facebook page, on my Instagram page, for that I was looking for illustrators for a new project. And in one day, I received 140 portfolios. I looked through all of them personally. And I saw that the style of Claudia was just right for the story that I had in mind. And so I called her. But that is also a great opportunity for me to kind of, I do this often. I often turn to my community to ask them, I'm looking for someone for this project or for that project. Because I love to assemble themes that are just right for a project. And then I love to cultivate this network of artists that in a very fluid way, they come together and they go apart and then they come together again to create things. And it's like a dance. And this is part of what I like very much of being an artist in this digital age, is that it makes much easier to dance with people from all over the world and, you know, people that you've never seen before and that maybe you'll never meet, but maybe you meet in 1 month and you make a book together. And that is something that I really love.
Yes, because you are in Rome. I am in Columbus. So there's a prime example of that.
Yeah.
Well, the Kickstarter is currently ongoing and it ends June 27th. Folks should probably just go over to Kickstarter.com and just search for Dr. Lee and the Crown-Wearing Virus, and I'm sure they'll find it there. And they got all the information of how they can help out. And where are you at right now, if I may ask, with the funding? Are you about 50% there, or what's the numbers looking?
Yeah, we raised 50% of the funding goal in the first 6 days. So we're pretty happy. Yeah.
That is very good. Well, can we talk about a couple other real quick projects? I don't want to keep you too long, sure. But I know there's a few other projects that you've been very successful with and very passionate about. So let's talk about another book, Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls. Could you give us a short summary of those stories, please?
Yeah, well, Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls was my first Kickstarter campaign. It was launched in the spring of 2016, so 4 years ago. And the concept is very easy. It is a collection of bedtime stories, each inspired to the life and adventures of an extraordinary woman, real woman, from Cleopatra to Serena Williams. So the book was launched on Kickstarter in 2016 with the goal of raising $40,000 to print the first 1,000 copies. And it ended up raising $675,000. And at the time, it became the most crowdfunded book in history. And its record was then shattered by Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls 2, which raised almost $900,000. So fast forward 4 years later, and the book has sold worldwide more than 4 million copies. And it has been translated into 48 languages. So it's been an incredible adventure because I recently left the company that I had co-founded that created Good Night Stories from Rebel Girls from scratch. But it's been a fantastic adventure. I learned a lot by being the author on the book and building the publisher that was publishing the book at the same time while you were an author. It was very... very exciting. When the book took off on Kickstarter, we started receiving offers from traditional publishers. And HarperCollins offered an advance of $1 million. And we said no. So because we were like, we moved from Italy to the US to start a publishing company, a certain kind of publishing company for children. This book is the opportunity to create what we've been wanting to create all of this time. So why should we give it up now? Just because, you know, and the pitch of traditional publishers is, of course, they offer massive distribution in stores and all of that. But the other thing is also that somehow there is this bias against publishers that don't publish their book with very established companies. Because it looks like you're not legit as an author, unless you were published by one of the big ones. There is a lot of, a snobbish attitude towards authors that either publish with smaller publishing houses or self-publish their books. And I have never bought into this ideology because I think it only serves the big companies. And I am a big believer into innovation. And I think that publishing is an industry that is ripe for disruption. It is one of the few industries that have been left behind. If you think of like movies, we have the Netflix. If you think of music, we have Spotify. If you think of publishing, there has not been a lot of innovation. So I've always been extremely passionate about forcing the system and finding new ways to find new audiences with your books. And I think that up to a point, that is only possible if you work outside of the traditional publishing system.
Well, let's talk about another book, and I'm going to try my best at this. I'm not sure that I'll pronounce it correctly. I know that it roughly translates to Elves on the Fifth Floor, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And it would be Elfi al Quinto Piano?
Al Quinto Piano. Yes.
Okay. I didn't do too bad, did I?
No. It was good.
Thank you. So this book was published in November of 2019 in Italy, and it's kind of a Christmas tale about the way in which children kind of follow leaders and how they become leaders and whatnot. It has a worldwide release that was supposed to be happening this year. Is that correct?
Yes, it is happening.
It is still happening. That was going to be my question. With everything that's going on around the world, that is still on track to go out to all the various different countries throughout the world.
Yes, absolutely. So Elves on the Fifth Floor is a Christmas novel about a biracial family with two moms and three kids that a few days before Christmas, they have to leave their hometown because a newly elected president declared families with two moms illegal. So they move to a new town that is called R, and they choose to move to this town because this is a town where nothing bad ever happens. The problem, the thing that they don't know, is that in order to prevent anything bad from happening, the people from R make sure that nothing at all ever happens there. And one of the ways they found to prevent anything at all from happening is they never ever talk to strangers. So when they get there, it's very hard for them to make friends with, you know, to meet their neighbors. And at the beginning, they don't understand what is going on. But then they meet this child, Olivia, who is a very, very weird child. She's an inventor. She's always riding very odd means of transportation. And she tells them, she explains to them the reason why the inhabitants of R are not talking to them. And she tells them that the kids of the town, to get around these grown-ups' culture, they founded a clandestine radio, and they meet on this clandestine channel to talk with each other. And so they have formed this sort of a resistance network. And this is the setup of the story. Then the kids, of course, ask Santa Claus for a radio for Christmas. And this sets off the beginning of this story with elves and Santa Claus. But it's really a story about how it is a story about the moral leadership of children. Mm-hmm. And something that we've seen with Greta and Malala before Greta, something that would have been unthinkable up until a few years ago. And it's about this community that, thanks to the children, rediscovers how to live as a community. So I feel that in a way, the book came out first in Italy last year in 2019. And of course, I knew nothing back then about social distancing. But the book is, I'm very, very curious to see what the reception will be this year, because the situation that is described in the city of R is very, very similar to what we are experiencing in many of our cities right now. So I'm very, and the book will be out in the winter in German, Swedish, Spanish, Catalan, and English.
Okay. One final thing before we start wrapping things up. Can you talk to us a little bit about Undercats Incorporated?
Yeah. Well, Undercats is the company that I started after leaving Rebel Girls. Mm-hmm. And my goal, so I like to surprise people. So part, and I like to surprise my audience. I like to surprise myself. So part of what I wanted to do with Undercats was I wanted to create an umbrella that allowed me to experiment in different forms and with different topics. One of the things that I don't particularly like of starting companies that have a very strong brand, like, for example, I don't like the brand to start guiding every choice that you make.
Yeah, gotcha. That makes sense.
So I am an artist, and I like to follow my curiosity. And I like to follow where my curiosity leads. If I have to be, if I have to produce content for a brand, as if it were a brand of apparel, for example, where you have to keep, I don't know, a certain consistency in colors, a certain consistency, I don't want to think like that. I want to let the stories drive, and I want to find for each story the best possible outlet. So I would like with Undercats to, well, of course, I am obsessed with the, with telling stories that haven't been told yet for a variety of reasons. I am obsessed with creating family entertainment that has a very strong correlation with themes that are being discussed in the world, because I feel that there is a very big gap there, because usually children's media goes always to evergreen themes. And it's very hard for children to find media that is very well produced and still connected to current themes, current issues. And I'm also interested in experimenting in a variety of media, for example, in podcasting, in TV, in movies. So I kind of want to create, Undercats is this attempt at creating an IP production company of IP that can live in a variety of media. The tagline that I chose for the company is "You never see us coming." So that's a little bit the feeling that I want for the productions of Undercats.
No, that's a good tagline. I like that tagline. Well, let's talk about one more time. Kickstarter.com, folks. Just search for Dr. Lee and the Crown Wearing Virus. And if you can donate, please donate, pick up a great copy of the book and whatnot. Francesca, would you like to tell folks where they can find you online, like through social media, stores, website, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Instagram. I am Francesca the Rebel. So pretty easy. Or yeah, or you can find me on Facebook. Same. You can still write Francesca the Rebel and you will find me. And my website, again, the same, francescatherebel.com. So you can kind of find me with this nickname online. And I usually try to post, especially on Instagram, a lot of content to inspire fellow creators to bring their projects to life. Because I'm, you know, over the course of my careers, I've been helped by a lot of people that spend time to give me advice, to explain to me how they had done certain things. And I try to give back to my community, and I try to create opportunities, not just to promote my work, but also to kind of explain the behind the scenes of the things that I do, so that if I can help fellow creators bring their projects to life, I'm always happy to do it.
Well, there you go. Francesca, thank you so very much for taking some time out of your very busy day for coming on here. And with that, I'm just going to go to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Now that I'm finished with my conversation with Francesca, I could tell you a little bit about World's Greatest Comics. They're the one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, posters, back issues, and various other collectibles. So stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And maybe you want to know their hours of operation or the phone number, or you want to contact them to see if they have something. Well, there's two different ways you could do it. You could check them out on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics, or find them online. Their website is wgcomics.com. And no matter how you interact with them, let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PBD Cast. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Francesca Cavallo, the author of Dr. Lee and the Crown Wearing Virus. And if you're interested in the book and you want to check it out, go over to Kickstarter.com, search for Dr. Lee and the Crown Wearing Virus. And if you can donate and pick up a copy, that would be great. And I appreciate Francesca taking some time out of her busy schedule all the way over there in Rome to sit down and talk to me. That still blows my mind, all the way from Rome. It's amazing what technology can do nowadays, isn't it? Well, with that, let's talk about some technological things you can use to get in touch with me if you'd like to talk about this episode. And that would be, of course, first, my email address. You can email me, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, or you could connect with me through my personal Twitter account, which is @pvdmvp, or you can leave me a message either over on the Facebook page, which is, of course, is @pvdcast, or the Instagram page, also under the title of PVDcast. And if you'd like to let some people know where they can get this podcast, there's a couple different places where you can do so. Obviously, pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is probably the best place to go, but it's also available through all the major podcasting platforms such as Deezer, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Libsyn Podcast Platform, Pod Paradise. I'm forgetting a few. You know what? Just go to your favorite podcast platform, search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put PVDcast John Orlando in the search engine, and you're sure to find it. And I also need to remind you that, of course, every Monday night at 9:30, the PVDcast airs live on Redline Radio. And all you need to do is go to redlineradiollc.com or find them on Facebook by searching for Redline Radio LLC. Or, better yet, you can download the Android app from the Google Play Store. And it is simply Redline Radio LLC. That's what the app is called. And you can take the station with you no matter where you go. You can hear all of the great shows, and you can hear all of the great music on that station. And again, that's redlineradiollc.com. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening. I'm going to get on out of here, so I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2019.